Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. This is part one of the first Susquehanna Permaculture Roundtable discussion that I recorded in the beginning of March at my friends Seppi, Pat, and Tara's house. And I have to give them thanks because I don't know that this event would have gone off without them. And I thank them for providing a space, being very generous and gracious hosts, and organizing this event. And in addition to the panelists who you'll hear introduce themselves in a few moments, this discussion was recorded in front of a live audience while I was also taking questions from podcast listeners via Facebook. You'll hear those in part two. And rather than continue on, Seppi, one of our hosts for the day, gave an introduction to the discussion. So I'll let him speak and join you afterwards with some thoughts and updates.
Yeah, so I want to welcome everybody to the first ever podcast of Scott Mann's at my house. I just kind of want to give you a little bit of history here. First of all, I wasn't really joking when I said that I see this facility as mine in legality only. And when I look around this room and I see the creativity and the genius and the skill sets of the various people, it's a complete honor to have you all here. There's a saying on the other side of this wall that for the longest time in my life brought me a level of discomfort. And it's been really beautiful reclaiming it. And I said I was trying to reclaim it. And my friend Don said, don't try, just do. And I feel like that's what's happening. That's what's happening with events like this and gatherings like this. And so I guess I want to say, like, please be a part of that process as much as possible. And I guess a little bit of history on what we're doing here. This house, this facility, this property, and our family, our extended family with Pat and Tara and my kids and my parents down the street, we all kind of operate with open arms. So I know most of the folks sitting around this room, if you kind of came into this moment similarly to myself, there have been points and times where you feel very alone in your thinking, in how you perceive things. And so that's kind of the purpose, I think, of gatherings like this, along with hearing some of I don't want to talk you guys up too much, but just the genius and beauty and love that our talkers are, our presenters are going to share. One last thing. I don't know if you saw the sponsorship hat up here. They're sponsoring this. I can't say it on the recording, but they're sponsoring this. Actually, the beauty of this is my son, who was five at the time, was yard sailing with my mom, his Oma, and he got this hat because he thought that I would really like the colors, which speaks to me on many different levels. One is potentially lack of education on my part or with my mother. Another is the brilliance of marketing. It blows my mind. But similarly to that writing on the wall, I've decided to claim it and own it and use it for good. And so Scott puts a lot of effort into his podcast, and I feel like quite possibly he doesn't get the financial backing that we need to be providing him for him to be able to continue his art and his craft and his passion. So I'm going to put this this hat on the mantle. And I wasn't planning on doing this, but if any of you feel led to leave him a thank you green note, please do. And at the end of the night, he can see what this fantastic company has brought him. So with that, again, the bathrooms are upstairs. There's water in there. And please feel like this is your home.
Hello, and thank you for joining me for the first live roundtable discussion before both a panel of permaculture practitioners as well as a live audience. Thank you, everyone who's here today live with me for this process. Today we have John Darby, Rafika Muhammad, Shannon Silty, and Boris Yeltsin. No, that's not really his name, but by the beard we're getting there. No, Ben Wise is back with me again for another live recording. And to begin things and get it started, I'm going to begin with John and just work our way down the line and allow everyone to introduce themselves. After you, John.
Hi, Scott. My name is John Darby. I work as the farm manager for the Horn Farm Center for Agricultural Education, which is located in York, Pennsylvania. In addition to that, I run my own farm called Sterling Farm, which is an organic vegetable CSA. How far back do you want me to go?
We're riding to the 14th floor in an elevator.
All right. So yeah, I work as an organic farmer. I spent a lot of my time dealing with volunteers and the public through the Horn Farm Center and trying to kind of promote our mission, which is supporting sustainable farmers. The Horn Farm is a education center in many ways, one of which is that we're running an incubator farm program that actually helps to get people interested in farming started, providing them with infrastructure, some business training and whatnot. And I can go into more detail on any of that if you want. And yeah, my own farm is a little under 2 acres and using a lot of different methods to grow food, mostly through CSA marketing, direct sales, farmers market, and restaurant sales.
Rafika.
God, thank you, and I'm honored to be a part of this process. My name is Rafika Muhammad. I'm a native of Harrisburg. Been working with this process, I want to say, for the past 30 years, not understanding that it was called permaculture at that time. I'm a mother of 10, 5 girls and 5 boys, and have over 34 grandchildren. And my husband and I just became great-grandparents of 2 recently. When I was having my children at that time, I was a stay-at-home mother, and I did my own gardening in my backyard. Did a lot of the processes and principles, again, not knowing that it had a name called permaculture. We're doing them just naturally. It was just something that just seemed natural to do. I also have my own business. My husband and I have been entrepreneurs in a community for over 30 years. And we also have our own nonprofit, which is called Ngazi. We're an arts and culture organization, and a lot of our permaculture activities are running through that particular organization.
Shannon.
Hi, Scott. My name's Shannon Silty. I consider myself sort of a nomadic person, just basically between York and Chambersburg and Harrisburg. I started out as an artist and eventually realizing I don't think I could finish a degree at art school. I ended up taking some time off and I discovered organic farming and I started working for Dietz Organics in York. And also through friends and connections I made through the farm, I got interested in permaculture. And from that experience, I started, you know, jumping around just because of, you know, financial reasons and trying to support myself. And I ended up in Harrisburg, where I started with some friends, started a community garden, community forest garden. And it was sort of an experimental thing for me. And I ended up getting really, really interested in it and wanting to go to approach it more scientifically and eventually maybe do permaculture on a municipal scale. That's one of my ultimate goals. So right now I'm a student at Shippensburg University for geoenvironmental studies. And I am currently assistant teaching a permaculture class from the School of Living taught by Patty Chelia in Baltimore.
Hey, I'm Ben Weiss. Thanks for having me back on the show, Scott. I've been actively involved in permaculture for about 8 years and working as a sole proprietor, running my own permaculture business or businesses for about 4 years. I teach permaculture centered in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Just recently launched the Rewilding School with my friend and colleague, Wilson Alvarez. I was a organic farmer for 5 years, but for the past few years have focused mostly on permaculture education and have been studying foraging, rewilding, wild land management, forestry, and I've been developing a system of permaculture design that's specific for tending wild and semi-wild ecosystems, and have been really grateful to work with so many good people, including Rafika here, who's employed me to teach 2 PDCs in Harrisburg. John took one of my PDCs, the third one that I ever taught, and we've been involved in classes and projects together for a few years. And I just met Shannon through Seppi, the host of the site where we are now, which is a place that I've been working on helping develop into a suburban permaculture center for the last 3 years.
Thank you all for that. As we open this conversation, I'd like to begin with I don't want to call it a simple question, but a single question. What is permaculture to each of you?
John Darby. I guess for me, what permaculture means to me or what it is to me, I guess I have to go back, you know, since probably around the age 15 or so, I got really involved in punk rock and really started looking critically at the culture at large and really didn't like what I saw, didn't really see my place in it or how I fit into it. And so I feel like for decades after that, I was constantly trying to rebel against it in different ways, whether it was through music, punk rock, through protesting, through, you know, other avenues. And so it did feel sort of like a Davy Goliath situation where you're constantly fighting against this mass behemoth. So discovering permaculture for me is sort of the first almost real world practical answer I found where I felt like I could put my energies for something or towards something that seemed like a good answer rather than constantly fighting against something, which was a big personal shift for me. I think the dominant culture at large, regardless of what area you're looking at, thrives on disconnection on every level and really can only function through that disconnection. If we look behind the curtain, then things start to fall apart. And so permaculture to me has sort of been like the study of relationships and how we can kind of reconnect the different aspects of that sort of network. You know, permaculture is systems thinking, and to me that works on every level. You know, as a farmer, I look at my farm as this system which exists within a larger system, and how do the different aspects of my farm affect each other? How does the farm itself affect the community at large? How does that community affect the greater world? And so for me, it really is that sort of reconnecting of that web and sort of a reestablishing of relationships, you know, on every level. I feel like I've reestablished relationships within myself through this process, and that has helped me reconnect to others, to the land, to basically every other part of the system. So I feel pretty passionate about permaculture, and, you know, I appreciate what you're doing, Scott. I want to make permaculture a household name, and I want it to stop. You know, in permaculture, we say value the margins, and I definitely feel like I've been living on the margins my whole life, and I kind of want to bring permaculture from the margins to the mainstream and kind of see where it can take us.
Rafika Muhammad, what permaculture means to me, or how I feel about permaculture, maybe I should say it like that, rebirthing and connectivity. As I mentioned earlier in my intro, when I was at home and doing my own gardening and just seeing how things connect each other, watching the rebirthing of seeds coming out the ground. I created my own compost bin at the time, didn't know that I was doing permaculture, took an old washing machine and took the agitator out and created my own worm bin. It's just bringing all those, like John has said, the connections, bringing those connections together. When I took the classes, and Ben is an excellent teacher in teaching permaculture class, I definitely want to put that out there. It just brought a lot of things home to me as far as being a person, being a female, and particularly a person of color. When I think about permaculture, I think a lot about culture and my own culture with my grandmom, and the things that she did was definitely permaculture. We just didn't call it that. We're talking about canning. We had a food forest out in her yard. You can go out and get pears and apples, etc. So for me, permaculture brings a lot of the rebirthing, the culture, and connecting and making sure we have those connections.
Okay, Shannon Silty. Permaculture is so broad, and any time I've ever been asked to define it, I've always been like, it's really difficult to define because it is so broad, and we know it as a section of its ecological design, permaculture is, and as we all know, ecology is the study of ecosystems and the connections within ecosystems. So to me, permaculture is sort of like the study of the ecosystems that compose the world and, you know, our roles within them. I mean, it's a lot broader than that. I don't even think that defines it really well. But my goal has really been to analyze the ecosystems that we live in, and then the societies that are around those ecosystems. And just as John had mentioned, people have role niches in society, and just as a plant in an ecosystem has a niche within that ecosystem. And to me, permaculture is sort of about figuring out what roles people can play in an ecosystem in a society where there are a lot of disconnections. Reestablishing the connections. I mean, reestablishing our connections to the ecosystem. We are of the earth, and we will return to the earth, and understanding our relationships to it, I think, is really important. And to me, that's really what, in a broad sense, permaculture is about, is finding our place within that and finding our niches within that.
This is Ben Weiss. I appreciate the answers that all the other panelists gave, and Shannon, I like your answer. It was a good permaculture teacher's answer that permaculture is ecosystem design. I like to often say that it's applied ecology. It's an applied science. It's a design system. And yet there's something odd about permaculture in that it's not purely a science and it's not similar to most of the other modern sciences. And that comes out of the fact that it is an applied science. Scott, you had Stephen Buhner on your show, you know, who's been a huge influence for me last year. And the title of that interview was The Citizen Scientist. And I loved that interview. And I think that a lot of what Stephen talked about for me is the heart of what permaculture is. It's putting the information that the scientific world is generating into the hands of everyday people and empowering them to use it to make the world a better place, as opposed to trusting institutions and corporations and governments with using that information and those technologies, because systemically, like John said, they're not doing a very good job of using the information that the scientific world is gathering. And we, as just regular everyday people, have as much of a right to use that information as these big institutions do. And the last thing I'll say about what permaculture is or what it means to me is to reference yet again, as I have before on your show, this book, Native Science by Dr. Gregory Cahete, because I think that the original thinkers and founders of permaculture were attempting to take indigenous wisdom from around the planet and repackage it in a way that modern people could understand how those people were living. And by and large, indigenous people lived within their ecosystems much more functionally than modern people do. And so to bring that full circle, I think that one way of essentially defining permaculture is that it's the effort to relearn to live as a native on the land where we're located and where our life springs from.
What I really like and take from each of your answers is how permaculture is so much more than landscape design, that it's so much more than how do I garden or how do I grow food. What you said, Shannon, about, you know, finding our own niches, or niches, however we wish to pronounce that, it was one of the things that David Holmgren talked about when I spoke with him and other people who studied those very early days of permaculture. Was it's like, no, this wasn't supposed to be, let's just all grow our own food. Let's not all just go back to the land. Everyone needs to find their own place and apply this where they are and make a difference with it. Each of you come from different backgrounds and have done different things to get where you are now. In the life that you live in this moment, how are you applying permaculture beyond the garden and beyond the landscape to the work that you're doing? Like, what are the other things that you're doing with permaculture that take it out of that framework that other people might be able to connect to understand, as Larry Santoyo said, that the garden is just a metaphor? And as I keep thinking about, we've got a lot of work to do, and we have to come together to do it and find our own way. If you have any thoughts on that, about the other ways that you're applying this in your lives, that other people might be able to do so as well.
A couple things come to mind with that. You know, with this whole idea of reconnection and using permaculture as a way to kind of reestablish relationships with the land base, you know, I've done some things which aren't too far removed from the garden that are pretty overt and blatant as to what it is. You know, I'm teaching kind of regular foraging classes and trying to get people engaged with where they're actually living and what kind of resources they can take advantage of and how they can kind of get to know the landscape where they are. You know, and I've had a lot of folks come to think this is kind of a neat idea. Maybe they've seen some of these like survivalist TV shows that they have, and they're like, wow, you can actually live off the land and eat plants. And so then they come out and see that it is really more than that. You can actually kind of use long-term observation and get to know the area that you're living in, and you'll know based on the time of year what kind of food sources are coming about shortly that you can take advantage of. To take it even farther outside the garden into everyday life, you know, the one aspect of permaculture that, you know, we went through when I was taking Ben's class was the idea of pattern language and looking for patterns in nature. And I've, you know, within the past year, with some personal stuff I've been through, like I've really been starting to look at pattern language within my own life and within my family's life from generation to generation, and things that have happened sort of decades back in my own family that are repeating to themselves now. And this idea that, You know, the universe sends you these things for lessons, and if you don't learn the lesson, it'll send it to you again in a different form. And so I've been giving a lot of thought to using permaculture design to almost design my life in a way, and using the principles to how I'm living every day and how my family operates and how taking it from there. So that's the first thing that came to mind with me.
Using permaculture more of a awareness and education in the communities that I live in. When we talk about valuing the edges, I'm on the edges of our community that seems to be an area that people forget. They always want to do things in the middle, where the edges is your most fertile for me, and where you can get the most out of education, permaculture. When I look at it, there's so much there that when you say we have a lot of work to do, there's so much there that we still don't know. So looking at it as far an education perspective. Again, I'm going to go back to the term of reconnecting and connecting everything. Shannon had mentioned about on a municipality level. I feel I am working with and taking permaculture in Harrisburg to a municipality level. I'm very honored to hear some of our council people talk about permaculture, which they never even mentioned those things before. We're talking more about recycling and people getting more interested in recycling. When you talk about using it as far as pattern in your life, doing the same thing in my life. I shared with somebody the other day, I just noticed, I'm like, wow, I'm taking out less trash. Is it subliminal? Is it something that I'm doing? Am I practicing it? Or is it something that's just, again, that we just do naturally? Lastly, for me, in looking this whole concept, permaculture is just a way of life. It just has a title. But really, we all do it every day anyway. We just don't know it or maybe not recognize it. But really, we do a lot of the methods and the principles and the ethics. We do that every day.
As a nomadic person and a student, there are some things that I wanted to put into practice that I haven't been able to yet. But what I notice that I tend to do that relates to permaculture is a lot of observation of natural systems. I currently live in Michaux State Forest, so I get to firsthand see what interactions are happening in the forest. And then also, as a college student, I just like to sort of analyze what's going on around me socially and through the relationships that I have with my family and with friends and with communities like this, you know, group of people in here. And I feel like although I might not be able to totally articulate what I take away from analyzing those relationships, I'm still learning a lot about the way that there are so many variations within the way people interact. And I think that one day when I do sit down to design something on a larger scale that encompasses communities and ecosystems, it's going to give me more insight on how to do that in a better way.
To build off of what the other panelists have said, which to me, we're basically speaking about like social permaculture a lot here, is I am constantly amazed by and fascinated with the permaculture zone map. I often tell my students that I think that it's far and away the best piece of wisdom that the permaculture movement has come up with. And applying the zone map to social permaculture, I see that what it's telling me, what I get out of it, and especially in relation to the ethics of permaculture, earth care, people care, fair share, or some people say future care, it's saying that I have the most power over my immediate surroundings. And that's where I can make the most positive impact and influence. So like all the other panelists have said, I've been trying to apply permaculture and systems thinking to my finances and where I get my resources and things like that for years. But even beyond that, I feel that the more I've tried to immerse myself in permaculture thinking, I feel compelled to root down into my own person, my own consciousness, my ancestry, my history. And something that I've been working on very actively for the past 2 years, which I'm just finding a lot of benefit from, is this process of trying to connect with the land where I live, the Conestoga River Valley in Lancaster County, and find what it means to be a native of that place. My own ancestors are Native American and Jewish, and both of those groups of people you know, were land-based indigenous people at one point, and I've looked into those traditions to see how those people related to their land bases. I've been studying shamanism with a teacher named Adi Munian Two Owls from Vermont for the last 3 years, and taking a lot of the techniques that I've learned with her to try to literally talk to the land where I live and see what it has to say. And that has been an invaluable process for me.
I want to return to that idea of reconnection with our past as well as our spiritual traditions because of the series that I'm doing on faith and earth care as part of the podcast. But before we move in that direction, because of your comment about social permaculture and that all of the discussion is about how we connect with the communities around us and find our place and everything, there's an idea that I was recently exposed to was that all of our ecological problems are human problems, that the problems that are being created by people. And with permaculture being an idea that is about building permanent civilization, that humanity can go on living. I think about the world, you know, if we cease to exist, the earth doesn't stop. That ultimately a lot of the problems that we face right now are about ensuring that we as a species and as cultures get to continue to move and grow. Going back to that statement that all of our ecological problems are human problems, is that something within the permaculture framework and your own personal studies that you've encountered or would consider in that way?
When you say human problems, do you mean like human-caused problems and or just problems of humanity?
Many of the problems that we face regarding things like climate change, clean water, having places to live that don't destroy habitat, all of these issues that we're trying to fix. When we've talked about rewilding, Ben, about the degraded landscape that has been caused by human activity, all of those issues that humanity has caused, that now we're kind of looking at them and scrambling to try to respond to them to find solutions that work so that we can still keep the lights on and drive our cars and all these other things that we probably need to realign in the broader society.
I think it's important to remember that, you know, we, meaning this certain sect of humanity, has certainly caused a lot of those things. But, you know, I kind of go back to like Daniel Quinn's thinking of like the leavers and takers and that, you know, at some point in time, humanity branched off in this other direction. And that's sort of where we came from. But, you know, human beings have lived within, you know, tribal existences pretty sustainably and pretty much in harmony with their surroundings for as long as mankind has existed. And if you look at like the total scope of humanity on a scale, it's like it's only this small little blip at the end where we've kind of diverted into this sort of destructive lifestyle. You know, native people still live today, and, you know, as we slowly exterminate them. So I guess I always bristle a little when we talk about how humanity calls this and humanity calls that, or how humanity is inherently flawed, because we've definitely taken a wrong turn, but humanity can work and can live within ecosystems in a healthy way. And so I don't think we can blame humanity for that, but we can certainly blame this culture, you know, which we could give a lot of different names, maybe industrial civilization. And so we need sort of a change in lifestyle. We need a change in this system in order to return to something that works. And, you know, given the scale that we're on at this point, clearly, is that possible? I don't know. I mean, that's kind of what we're reaching for here. So time will tell, I guess. I don't know if anyone else has thoughts.
You said about humanity, and I'm just going to use the term people. We have a problem in our own backyard right now dealing with our incinerator here in Harrisburg. It's killing people. I serve on the environmental council for the city of Harrisburg, and we had a meeting the other night talking about Mount Ashmore over there. When you burn the ash, it's sitting right in the backyard. And I like the term social permaculture, so I just think this is very perfect. Where that thing is positioned at, is you can't pick it up and move it away, but it's around a large community of people. I look at permaculture when I mentioned earlier also about healing. We got a lot of healing that we need to do over there. How can we heal Mount Ashmore? Is that something that we can grow in there and maybe use somewhere down the line? You know, we don't know. That's the conversation I wanted to have with some of y'all at another point. So when we talk about people and looking at how they're just destroying things and destroying our community, a lot of it is how are we going to deal with the greed part? And we have to deal with it. One thing I like about permaculture, you don't have to worry about money and certain things. If you embrace permaculture in a certain type of way, for me, it is a freedom. and you can do things in a certain way and feel that freedom. You're producing your own. You're doing your own. You're being your own. You're loving. When I'm saying your own, I'm talking about your community and your surroundings. So I just look at things a little bit differently. People need to do some serious soul searching and changing themselves. We might not be in destroying the planet as fast maybe we're used to, but we still are at a very rapid rate. But when we look in our own backyards and what's going on in our own backyards, I mean, in Harrisburg, that incinerator is destroying our capital city and our surrounding area.
I like what Rafika said about soul searching. And when I was thinking about how to answer the question, I was thinking about something real similar. So I'm going to sort of reiterate that. I think that through studying permaculture, we begin to understand these ecological patterns, like Shannon mentioned earlier in the panel interview here. And because human beings are absolutely an inherent part of Gaia, the biosphere, the global ecosystem, we function in every way with all the same patterns that an ecosystem functions on, in our hearts and in our minds, in our social interactions. And I think that environmental problems are social ills. They're not the result of social ills. They are social problems. When people think, or through a lack of thinking, when people mistreat the earth, they are directly mistreating other people. And again, to go back to what John just said, not every culture allows people to act that way, but the modern dominant global industrial culture thrives on mistreatment and oppression of other people. And, you know, thinkers and writers and social scientists for 100 years, at least, if not more, have been pointing out on the margins of science that cultures that begin to mistreat the earth do so right around the same time that they begin to mistreat people, and vice versa. I think it's all the same problem, and I think that it all comes back down to each individual's consciousness. I think what's going on in my mind and in my heart, you know, reflects directly on my life, and if it's disorganized and I'm not living well, then I'm contributing to the whole community and the whole society and the whole world not living well. But if I am living well in my own life and I'm clear and understanding what's going on within me, then I'm contributing to a good way of living for all of humanity.
As Mollison tells us in the very beginning of the designer's manual, the prime directive is to take responsibility for ourselves and the lives of our descendants. And then we get into the ethics that permaculture espouses for us to follow.
I'd like to just throw in there too, since you're referencing Mollison, that, you know, in the beginning of David Holmgren's amazing book, he has this set of assumptions that permaculture is founded on. And one of them is that even though human beings are unique, that we're subject to all of the same natural laws that everything else in the universe is subject to. And I think when we begin to forget that, we start living in ways that are really destructive.
I'll go ahead and start with you, Ben, since you have the mic and were the person who started this thread for my mind. You and I talked about the politics of permaculture recently, and in that there are certain divisions of where folks fall kind of along a spectrum. And I've been in this process of doing a series on faith and earth care. I've been wanting to examine how different religions communicate care for the earth, and have started with Islam and Christianity so far, and I mean, talks with other people of different faiths to continue that. But some of the feedback that I get from that is the concern about the permacult and the blending of spirituality and permaculture beyond the design processes was laid out by Holmgren and Mollison. To show a little bit of my bias here, I think that faith is an incredibly important place for people to work from and is a way in which they understand the world. And it's why I've been interested in talking with people about faith, not to say that permaculture is one or another or is none at all, but to understand the lens through which people see the world so that we can all understand one another better, to connect with each other so that, well, the thought that I had when I was driving over here was that if we stand alone, we fall. But if we stand with others, we can't be knocked down, or if we do, there are others there to pick us up. And if permaculture is really going to have an impact and change the world, then we have to invite these other communities in. With that long introduction and background for this, what role does faith play for you in your exploration of permaculture as you've explored shamanism and spirituality over the last 3 years? Is there a place in your permaculture world for that, or do you see them as separate things?
For me, spirituality is the foundation of my life, so I can't separate my work as a permaculturist from that. But it is important to me to uphold a certain professional standard with permaculture, and so the way that I try to present it, especially in my classes, is I try to personalize it and show people how I practice permaculture and how I understand. And if people want to get into a conversation with me about my spirituality, I think that it is generally beneficial to be forthright. And I teach permaculture twice. I teach a PDC twice a year at a place called Pendle Hill, which is a Quaker retreat center. And the staff there, the administration, has specifically charged me with making the curriculum in those classes a fertile ground for people's spiritual growth. And so in that context, it's professionally appropriate for me to blend my spirituality with permaculture and show other people ways for them to blend their spirituality and permaculture. But just like any good scientist can have their own belief system and their own spirituality, but still practice or be engaged in a scientific process that is understood and that's useful and that has certain standards and norms that anyone in the world can understand, I try to approach permaculture in the same way. And I'm not trying to package permaculture as though it is a spiritual practice, and I'm not trying to package it with my own personal spiritual bias. David Holmgren does a good job in his book of talking about how, since permaculture is a system that we're using to design human civilization, we have to acknowledge spirituality and faith and religion. And I think that's good enough. We acknowledge it. We make a place in it for people to put their culture and their beliefs into it, but we don't make it the thing, and we don't try to brand any specific way of seeing the world into the essence of what permaculture is.
Permaculture to me is spirituality. I had seen that the first time I really got into class. We always want to separate stuff. The world's not separated. It all works together in sync with each other, connected. But we as humans always want to separate things out. My faith, as far as dealing with permaculture, again, I can't separate that out. I see it. It was something you said earlier, Scott, when you was starting this segment. You was saying you were dealing with Muslims and Christians and bringing that piece together. For me, when I started really getting into permaculture and started putting my plans together and my gardens together, I went right to Genesis in the Bible and looked at all that. That was my curriculum. That was my foundation. That was my direction on how to put all this together. Also going back to Quran and also looking at certain other religious texts, it just all works together. And that is what keeps me going and what keeps me thriving through this process. So I can't just sit here and say that there's a separation. It's all about faith. And I know the classes that we had here in Harrisburg, Ben does make it very personal. That comes right out from the beginning. And the first class that we had, I think it was week either 2 or 3, how we all just sat there and said how we missed each other. For me, that was very emotional because some of us didn't know each other. We're getting different people from different backgrounds, different walks of life, different faiths, different religions, different cultures. And we all didn't know each other, but we came back in 2 weeks and said how we missed each other. So that was a connection right there. That was a spirituality connection right there. And the classes have grown, and I think we've still been bonded and connected ever since. So when we talk about spirituality and permaculture, I don't see a separation. I see a marriage between the two. When you say about the culture part, I know people like to break words down. Is what you make it. Is what you feed into the cult. Because right now, we could say we're in a cult right now having this discussion. Is what we make it. So I don't see a separation in that.
Yeah, I definitely see that there's space for people to bring their personal faiths into the permaculture movement. For me personally, spirituality has always been very experiential. I am completely content to just be with the world. You know, I've had experiences on my farm and out in the natural world where maybe I've felt things I can't explain, and I've always been fine with that. Like, I've always been fine with the not knowing, and I'm not somebody that's ever felt like I needed to place a label on anything. But when you're talking about this idea to reconnect things through permaculture, it makes sense to connect yourself to other, whether that other is the land base or the spiritual world or anything else. That said, I also get really excited and kind of geek out on the science of these systems and why is the mycelium in my soil reacting to plants in this way. And so I'm totally fine with looking at things through a purely scientific lens as well. But I never understood why some folks think it has to be one or the other and why they can't both come from the same source.
I think that people's spiritual perspectives are constantly shifting, regardless of if you subscribe to any specific religion. And I think what permaculture does is it sort of provides a forum for people to come together on the ways in which they do relate. I mean, we're all human, we're all a part of the system. And I think that there is room for religion. Spirituality, it seems to me, is sort of the essence of permaculture, and that it's more of a universal spirituality. It might not necessarily be as, it seems more innate to me, like people can relate on more of an innate level and not with these constructions of whatever their religious beliefs are necessarily. So I think that there is room, but I also think that it doesn't seem to me like permaculture is a place for any argument over spirituality. It seems to me like it just sort of provides the foundation for, you know, people to connect regardless of their spirituality.
This is Ben Weiss again. As a permaculture instructor, I've been in class settings where people's faith and the cosmology that they subscribe to, their worldview, has come into direct conflict with the scientific worldview. And what I've always tried to do, I shouldn't say always because this has only happened a few times. The few times that this has happened, what I've tried to do is to, like what Shannon just said, create a forum for conversation and then and acknowledge what everybody thinks and how everybody's feeling. And like what Shannon just said, try to find common ground and point out that what we are studying and the fact that we're in a room full of people who are actively trying to learn and actively trying to better themselves and their community, that that's what's important in the moment, that there's something useful there for all of us to focus on. And hearing Rafika's response about how faith and spirituality and permaculture mesh for her makes me feel like I did a good job teaching the class, because I want my students to come out of the class understanding permaculture and be able to put their own life into the context of, you know, this effort to consciously design our civilization.
Right now, we're at about the 50-minute mark, and I had a question come in over Facebook that is about chickens, but I don't want to end this conversation about personal connection and reconnection and the social side of things that we've been discussing with that. So I would like to end this current session just by asking all of you if you have any final thoughts to add on this topic of social and cultural permaculture before we take a break and then come back and start with some more practical. We need to engage society. This is all practical. Some more on the ground techniques about raising plants and animals in our designs.
The only thing that I want to say is, you know, you started off your question talking a little bit about the politics of permaculture and maybe some of the schisms and things that are going on in that. This is Ben Weiss again, and I just don't want to participate in that. And I said this to you the other day. I think that in any avenue of life, there are people who want to argue. And I feel like sometimes I want to argue, but really I don't. And I don't want to participate in that. I want to participate in something that's cooperative and functional. And I'm actually really glad that everybody's answers didn't even go down the road of these arguments that are happening in the permaculture community.
Yeah, I believe that the political world, to me, it's just like when I start to think about it, I go down this. It's so intricate. It's hard for me to understand So personally, I like to see, like, I like experience to see the change from what a community did right in front of me. I feel like that's the most effective way to create change. Be the change that you wish to see.
Permaculture and politics. I agree. I don't want to argue and have that debate neither, but I can sit here and say that I have been blessed to work with our municipality in the city of Harrisburg to talk about permaculture, to show permaculture, to develop designs, to get buy-in, to reduce the argument. I think it's all about how we approach. I didn't approach our municipality so much about, oh, we're just going to have community gardens. I approached them about a total urban agriculture initiative throughout the city, and then followed up saying, and we will be using permaculture design as our guides. That opened up the door of saying, okay, what is permaculture design? And then we started educating and learning from there. So I think a lot of when we talk about the political aspect, is this all about education? And of course, they're nervous because we are talking about serious change. And it's baby steps. And I can say, if you want to look at how you can change your community on a political level, I did a lot of that in public forums. So I went to council meetings. So it was televised. It was on radio. It was in the paper, et cetera. And I think that even helped with that whole process. When I think now, that was done in 2005 and we're in 2013. So like I had mentioned earlier, you know, I feel honored when I hear our mayor talk about sustainability. I'm honored when I hear council members talk about permaculture. The executive director that I'm working with at the Boys and Girls Club, and we're doing things there, she talks about permaculture all the time and has really never taken a class, but because we have those conversations. So it could be a good segue in something, but maybe good, wholesome conversation, but there will be a debate. We're talking about changing, and people are a little nervous about change.
And I have to thank you very deeply from my own personal space for being a part of this, Rafika, because you've taken on something that for so many people is such a challenge and so intimidating to be involved in engaging the governmental political structures for change and being in a place where you've been able to do it. And it serves as a model for the rest of us as ways that we can do this too, that in some environments, it's not the same as just, you know, calling up the secretary of your local township and going, hey, I want to have chickens. Well, let me see if they'll do that. And then a month later, you get a phone call back. We're going to do chickens. You'll have an ordinance in 3 months. That with all the vested interests and everything else, it builds up and it can be very hard. But for people who are thinking about it, you can engage that system. And if you're okay with it, Rafika, can I share your contact information for anybody who wants to work within the system and take it on and bring about positive change? The last thought that I have as we bring this first section to a close, a lot of times when you've heard me talk about permaculture, it's been from a very apolitical perspective. But I've been reminded in talking with some of my friends here, talking with Will and Natasha is dangerous in a good way for my thinking, or from an email that I got from a student in Argentina. Even if we don't engage in politics, there are still political actions that we can take to make change. But to the core of the question and the conversation that you and I have had, Ben, about the politics of permaculture, at the end of the day, I think that building a better world is bigger than any one of us. It's bigger than any book, any ego, any project. It's about all of us coming together as a community and, well, as you said, Shannon, finding our niche, filling it, and making a difference in the world. And if we can do it with love and compassion for one another in that process and pay attention to those three ethics, there's no reason why we can't change the world. So thank you all for joining me for this first part. Thank you to the audience who's sitting around us for listening to this dialogue and all the places that it went. We'll come back in a couple minutes and we'll start the next piece and be more about the on-the-ground side of this. So thank you, everyone.
And that was part one of the first Susquehanna Permaculture Roundtable discussion. As you heard there, I asked Rafika for her contact information, if anyone would like to get in touch with her, to learn more about how she engages the political system to bring about change. And I'll include this information in the show notes, but I know not everyone sees those. So Rafika's Phone number is 717-343-6881. Her email address is rafikam@aol.com. That is rafiyqam@aol.com. I will also include information in the show notes for you to contact Ben Weiss if you would like to. I'll also reach out to Shannon and Joan and see if I can have their information up there for you as well if you'd like to contact them. I hope you enjoyed this. I really liked how this worked out and the way that it went. It was very different being in that environment with the number of people and their different answers and moderating and moving the discussion along. But if you enjoyed this, we're looking to do another one of these with someone who many of you have contacted me about doing an interview with, and that's Charles Eisenstein, author of Sacred Economics and also The Ascent of Humanity. And I've met Charles on several occasions. He lives not far from where I'm at. And Seppi and Tara and Pat are looking to organize another roundtable discussion like this with Charles, where we're thinking that the first hour will be a rather, you know, kind of normal permaculture podcast with Scott Mann style interview. And then we'll do a second hour of discussion that will be some permaculture practitioners along with Charles discussing the ideas that he presented in the first piece. So if you're interested in something like that, please help me help the community by supporting the show. Go to thepermaculturepodcast.com/support, and there you'll find ways that you can make contributions to continue this work and see more of it come out into the world to benefit each of us individually and all of us as a community. I look forward to all of the opportunities that are available to get this information out there, to make it accessible and easy for people to find, and to help each one of you to the best of my abilities on your road with permaculture. Please feel free to contact me. Email show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, by phone 717-827-6266. Join in the conversations at Facebook at facebook.com/thepermaculturepodcast. Or if you want to, it's not something I'm always on, but I do check in from time to time. I'm also on Twitter, where I am @permaculturecst. I will join you again for another short episode on Monday, March 31st, 2014. Until then, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.